Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Fire Engineering Hump Day Hangout with Traditions Training and our group of instructors and distinguished guests that we have on today. Obviously, this is the first show since the devastating news of the loss of our leader, or the mob boss, as I like to call him, Bobby Halton. So we got to keep going. That's what Bobby wanted. If he would be talking over me right now if he was on the show. So even we'd be asking him for FDIC updates, but we lost an incredible man, incredible leader, somebody that did more for the fire service than I think anybody could possibly know. With all the conversations he had with, you know, firefighters, officers, and chief from across the nation. So it's going to be a somber occasion at FDIC this year, but I'm sure he'd want us to power through. So, but as we get started today on our topic, one we've been putting in the we've had in the hopper for a month or two. We finally got Roger Steger and a group from the Baltimore City Fire Department to come on with us. And we have Sammy Hittle from Wichita. We got Donnie Fletcher from the Prince George's County Fire Department outside Maryland. So we have, I call him Captain David now. So, but he's from Engine 46 in Baltimore City, and Charlie Snow from Rescue 1 in Baltimore City. And so our topic today is about vacant building fires. So a very important topic, and I think it needs to be discussed. And I used to fight a lot of fires in vacant buildings. I don't do that anymore, just due to the change in the demographics and the geographic area that I served a lot in and where I went for 11 years. But I don't think a lot of the country understands the tactics and what these departments that have a lot of these vacants have to deal with every day, and their understanding of the fire, their understanding of the risk, their understanding of, you know, their demographic is crucial. And I don't think people quite understand that. And it can only be spoken from people that live that world or live in that world. So that's why we wanted to have these gentlemen on. We're waiting on Lieutenant Miller from Harrisburg, PA, another city that does have a little bit of a vacant problem. So I'm going to kind of let everybody just go around. I'm going to start with the people that I see. So, Mr. Snow, go ahead and introduce yourself and a brief discussion, then we'll get to about Baltimore City in a minute.
Thanks, Chief. My name's Charlie Snow. I've been an acting lieutenant at Rescue 1 for about a year now. I got hired back in 2009, and I'm a leader for the SOC training in the city. So we do a lot of building instruction and things like that.
Okay, Captain David, but of course you can introduce yourself with your last name.
What's going on? My name's Dave Gersio. As you said, I just got promoted to the captain at Engine 46 in Northwest Baltimore. Prior to that, I was a lieutenant at Truck Company 10. And before that, I was a fireman and an engine driver on the east side at Engine 51. So definitely been in some neighborhoods that have a vacant dwelling issue. I got hired in 2007, and yeah, nothing too fancy.
All right. We appreciate you being with us today. Chief Fletcher.
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. Donnie Fletcher, Battalion Chief with the Prince George's County, Maryland Fire Department. I have 18 years on, six of those as a battalion chief, and 9 years as an instructor with Traditions Training. I'm glad to hop on here. So,
all right, thank you. And the illustrious Captain Samuel Hittle.
There you go, Captain Hittle, Rescue 2, Wichita, Kansas.
I'm sorry, is that the correct pronunciation or?
Nah, it's close enough though. Nah, Wichita.
Okay. And then Roger Steger.
Good afternoon. Roger Steger, City of Baltimore. Also similar spot, same spot that Charlie holds, but in Engine Company 8. So senior firefighter, acting lieutenant position. So for 17 or so years.
God, you make me feel old, Roger.
I try.
So let me get to, so I guess, well, I'm going to let Sammy kind of start with this one. So Sammy, I'm going to give you a minute to gather your thoughts here. Is that, you know, what is this topic? What does this topic mean to you, I guess?
Vacants. I think that a lot of the fire service wants to take the approach that it's vacant. They don't need to go in. But that's not the case. We don't know who's in there, and particularly if they're vacant, you know, what started the fire. We've had cases in the fire service where they found homeless people in a vacant that they went defensive on. The family went back months later and found them. And that was in a Midwest city. To me, I don't want to oversimplify it. But to me, vacants are like driving on ice. We're going to get to our destination. We're going to accomplish the objectives that the citizens expect from us, which is extinguishment, but we're going to move a little bit slower. And just like driving on ice, it's one of those things that the more experience you have driving on ice, the better off you're going to be.
Okay. And I guess we'll go to Captain David. So we'll flip lock back 14 departments here. So
I'm slow with the Zoom. I had it on mute.
Okay, no problem.
So actually last night when I found out about the outline from the email, I pulled up our MOP, our procedure that came out on April of 2022, which was, you know, 3 months after our Stricker Street incident. And we define, we, the Baltimore City Fire Department, define a vacant building as a building that is not maintained, is in obvious state of disrepair and neglect, and has no operating utilities, and not legally occupied. I think that's an umbrella definition that probably a lot of us, you know, could agree on. But as far as like tactics in that, I really like the analogy that Sam just said about driving on ice. Something that I think we do in Baltimore really well is a fast, aggressive interior attack, and we get the opportunity to do that a lot. So, you know, we're trained in it, and then we do it often. So we kind of become a master at the skill, like mastery level. And when we do it in vacants, I feel like a lot of our experienced officers and experienced senior firemen are able to, you know, kind of slow down, but still move at a fast pace. Comparatively speaking, you know, we find a lot of people in vacants where we are. We have a significant number of vacant dwellings, but we also have a significant number of homeless people in the city. And those homeless people, if I was a homeless person in the winter, I would be looking for some type of shelter from the weather. So I think it's important that we give those structures and those people the same chance as we do somebody in an occupied home. So, you know, we're still aggressive with it. We've definitely changed up our tactics a little bit and slowed down a little bit, but we still are aggressive in vacant dwelling fires.
Okay. So just, I was a little slow getting a link to, Lieutenant Miller, he's worldwide known as Skull. He's a lieutenant with the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania Fire Department. So Skull, I'm going to let a couple guys answer a couple questions, and you'll see how we're going. We're just trying to define vacants for people. So we'll get back to you in 1 minute, but he's on with us now. So Chief Fletcher.
Yeah. So, oddly enough, the department that I work for doesn't have you know, it's widely known for our policies and our general orders. We actually don't have a policy on vacants, and I don't believe we ever have. And oddly enough, in the area that I work at, and this isn't a stat to hold me to, but I do believe the amount of vacant fires have gone down, and majority of them are occupied. I think the largest takeaway, particularly, and you know, my perspective 10 years ago as a company officer, and as I've matured as a chief officer, has probably changed in how I approach these, and more importantly, my ability to slow down and take a look at the structure. You know, I we always say, hey, we do our size up, take a look at it, see what you see. But do we really do that? Are we really getting so tunnel vision that, you know, we're not taking a look and we're just kind of moth to the flame and heading towards a fire? So, Ricky, do you want to go over a couple things that I would say look for? Or
no, we're going to get into that.
Okay.
Get into that. But so we'll go to Charlie from Rescue One. What's your perspective on all this, I guess?
So in Baltimore, we're 92 square miles. And for the first time in 100 years, our population has sank below 600,000. So in the 50s and 60s, it was a height of 1 million. Now we're down to 575. And those people didn't uproot their houses and take them with them. So I think something that's overlooked a lot of times is, sure, it might be vacant or might be uninhabitable, but the dwellings on either side aren't. And I think that's something that's, people always throw out, why you go in there? Why you it's dangerous. Well, it's all dangerous. So it's a matter of perspective.
Okay, Skull, you kind of got the gist of where we're going here?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Skull. It's like,
yeah.
So obviously Harrisburg, PA is where Skull's a lieutenant at. And I go up there quite often and it's something. So I'll let you go.
Third world. So which where are we at in topics here right now? Did you guys touch base with any of the USAR markings yet?
No. Just what's your description of vacancy there are in Harrisburg? What is your definition?
We're not unlike Baltimore, Philadelphia, Wilmington, Philly. We have our share of row homes. I don't even know what the numbers are. We're really bad up here with numbers and everything. Now, quite obviously, the 70s and 80s were our heyday also with nonstop fires. And I can tell you this right off the bat, in my early years here in the early 80s, I couldn't even tell you the first time I went to an occupied working structure fire. It was just vacant and so forth. We're dealing with row homes and duplexes, but primarily vacant rows, wood frame, and a lot of them are in absolute disrepair. And like everybody else was hitting on too, we're assuming they are occupied. I don't know what the numbers were, but I could probably guarantee you that all over, throughout these years, we've had just as many grabs, if not more, in vacant dwelling fires than we did with occupied working structure fires. So we're very serious about our vacant tactics. Like I said, we do the USAR markings on there to try to keep us safe. But the end of the day is, even if it's completely X'd out, we're still getting inside. We're going to bang out our searches. This is the world we live in right now. So, yeah, that's where we are with the vacants here. There's policy, but we're still going in. It's just, we get beat up just like Baltimore does or Philly does, but we show up. We're going in. It's just the way it is.
All right, Roger, you want to chime in here as the last one? Or
sure, I won't beat the dead horse anymore, but I mean, our bread and butter, we have a ton of row home vacants, but like Charlie spends a lot of time in the downtown section more than the rest of us, but ride through downtown and it's not to see 3, 4, 5, 6 story vacant buildings through our downtown area as well. The area Dave's up and up in Northwest is a lot of 2 and 3 story big frame dwellings. What was that one a couple weeks ago, Dave? Or Charlie, like 3,000 plus square feet?
Yeah, it was probably closer to 4, 3-story framer. It was pretty big.
Yeah, that's the average 5th Battalion, big framer.
So all those require a little bit of different thought process and tactics. So it's not just the 2-story row home every single time.
So I guess we kind of, everybody kind of defined the vacant part and kind of, kind of said so. So I'm just kind of wondering as a company officer, so we'll leave Donnie out of this for the time being and come back to him. So, everybody's here as a company officer or a senior firefighter. And obviously, Roger, please correct me if I'm wrong. Obviously, a senior firefighter can ride up in the position of officer in Baltimore City, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so, you know, Roger rides the front seat of a fire truck. You know, obviously, Captain David rides his rig, and, you know, Sammy. So, I mean, so what is our consideration? What did we go to these vacants and we can say, yes, there's people that live in them and that they're dilapidated and they're abandoned. But what is your risk considerations when you look at this vacant building that's on fire? So, I mean, once again, I'll start with Sammy because usually Sammy gets everybody rolling here. But I mean, what are our considerations when we look at this building and we've driven by it 50 times coming back from EMS runs or other calls and know that it's vacant and then all of a sudden it's on fire. And now you are the person that has to make the decision of what we're going to do with this fire because the chief isn't there yet.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. We're going to open it up, but we're not going to over open it. I think that's a tactic that I've seen in the fire service where people will try to take off all the plywood or something like that, but they would never go around and bust out all the windows before they went in and occupied. So we're going to try to open it up as we go. You know, our rule of thumb is one set of boards per side, per floor, and then we go around and we clean it up as we get more resources there. You know, so we definitely want to soften it so we can get out. You know, one of the things that I'm very big on and I think is important when you're in a vacant or a dilapidated, I really love what Baltimore defined it as. You know, there's vacant being unoccupied and then there's dilapidated and illegally squatted in. So when we're talking about those, it's important to sound the floor as we go through. We don't know what they've done with it. And we basically just approach it like anything else. We're going to work one room at a time and we're still going to open the roof. I'll tell you one thing we did the other day. I don't know what it is, but every once in a while you get those buildings that you go to enough that you know it's only time before it starts on fire, right? So in those, we'll ask our guys to actually walk the footprint. Or one of the things we did the other day where they had ripped the stove out and put the house in an explosive range is it was pretty overgrown. So when we left, we took the chainsaws out and we cleared some paths so that the trucks could get a ladder up there and get us a vent.
All right. That you good, Sam?
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, Skull, I mean, you're what year are you into being a lieutenant now?
Hmm. 2018, I believe. So.
Yeah. So you're only, it's only a couple of years. So I meant,
yeah.
Going from, you know, being Skull the firefighter, you know, and I know what kind of firefighter you are, a tenacious one. Is it, and now that you're a company officer responsible for people on your rig and you pull up to these places now, what is your considerations for all this?
Great question. And it has been a struggle to say the least. From sitting in that back seat for all these years and just worrying, you know, no worries. I'm putting a fire out. I'm the pipe man. Now I have to, you know, now I got a responsibility. I got a whole bunch of young kids and trying to keep everybody safe so they go, you know, the heck home at the end of the day. Yeah, so the vacants, you know, we just had five arsons here. I think it was here last year, the year before, bam, bam, bam. And the second one we went to, I'm on my tower ladder, we pull up. Places barking out every window. The Bravo side had already collapsed, and it probably already collapsed just from being old and dilapidated. So our guys go in, you know, we know there's squatters in there. They do the search, and I figured, okay, they're backing out. We're going to hit it with the tower ladder and the wagon pipes, and we're good to go. Well, we kind of got a little too carried away, and before I know it, there's lines going into the building. That's stuff we've done every damn day, you know, and we got bit. The guys made it up, I believe, to the third deck, and the Charlie side catastrophically collapsed. And I'm in my tower ladder bucket. I'm, you know, give me water. I'm going to kill it. The building collapses. And at the end of that fire, when we counted up all the brothers could have got crushed or killed, we almost had a dozen of my brothers nearly killed at that fire. So it's just, you know, size up, size up, size up. But some of this stuff, you know, that we're doing is just You know, it's just, it's a wake up call. I had to pull my best bud. You know, we've been friends and other lieutenant off the squad company into my tower ladder bucket. And he was just like a kid. He's staring at the floor of the tower bucket. I'm giving him hell like a dad to a child. I'm like, what in the hell are you doing it? You know, what were you thinking? And so, yeah, it's just every now and then we have these close calls. It just, my God, it really makes you think. But yeah, immense responsibility. And all these cities in the our region, it's just, it's an everyday battle with these vacant buildings. So.
Okay. Captain David?
I was taking some notes. So as the, you know, as the, when I was a pipe man, you know, a few years ago, I felt like I could have tunnel vision because I trusted my officer to really have, you know, take into account the big picture. And falling into that role as an engine company lieutenant at 52, you know, that was pretty different. And then, you know, when I moved to truck 10, and now that I'm the captain, you know, I feel even more responsible, you know, not just for my own crew, but all the other crews operating with us. But some things that I take into consideration on vacants when I pull up and size it up are the doors and the windows on the first floor on the office side, as well as the rear. So we are pretty adamant about a size up from the rear, which a few years ago we really didn't worry about too much. So hearing a size up from the rear, you know, if it's open, if it appears vacant, you know, that's different. We don't know if I didn't mention this earlier, but in my opinion, we don't know that it's vacant until after the primary search proves that. You know, I really pay attention if I'm in the front to the rear size up, like, is the door open, the basement access, and is it open? Then, you know, if it's closed up from the rear, maybe they're sneaking in from the Charlie side. So that's something that I really take into account as a report from the rear, and something that I really try to do detailed if I am the second engine or the second truck going to the rear. Especially on truck 10 and 52 engine, I really, really paid a lot of attention to the experience from my senior guys. When I was at 52, my first act command had 21 years there. He, you know, just your typical, you know, he had multiple fires in the same houses over the years. He knew them really well. So if he, you know, told me like, hey, this one we've had, you know, a couple in, it's probably not that good, then, you know, I would really take into account his experience. And the same thing at truck 10, my act command had like 19 years there. So, you know, using my members' experience of the first two, and then your own, you know, you go to medic runs, they're not all in occupied houses. I mean, you go to overdoses at vacant dwellings all the time as well. Something that I think should be considered is the amount of personnel we send in these. If it is in not like the best condition, maybe we limit the personnel that we send in. Still, you got to be aggressive, but you can be smart. Aggressive isn't like a bad term. You just got to be intelligent with your decision-making abilities. And then something else that we really started doing was a report from the roof. And what that tells me, you know, if my truck driver is going to the roof and he's like, you know, saying that we have a previous hole cut, then that's a pretty good indicator that you've had a previous fire in there, unless you were training and, you know, cutting a hole in the vacant. But, you know, it's a pretty good indicator that you had a fire. And somebody already popped the top. I do think that we are going to continue to make mistakes, and that's not the end of the world as long as we learn from them and then take the lessons that we learn and teach others about them. So, that's all I got really for now.
Okay. Charlie?
So last night when I got the questions, I jotted down my considerations for vacants. And really, it came down to me is that exterior size up. And I just got some random thoughts that I kind of jotted down here, and I'll have word vomit, and you guys can tell me what you think. So how many stories is it? What type of roof, flat versus peaked? What's the condition of the cornice? Most of our 2 and 3 story dwellings will have a cornice. So is that cornice missing? Is it pulling away from the structure? Is there previous fire damage to the cornice and above the windows? What's the condition of the brick and the mortar? Is the mortar missing? Are there any bricks missing, or they begun to spald due to a poor repair? Any cracks or sagging in that spandrel space between the doors and the windows? Are the doors and windows racked? So are they at a square? Is there any visible bulge of the front wall? Is it relatively plumb? The type of window coverings, whether they be bars, plywood, or block, and then the fire conditions that are present. So all those things, the engines are pulling their lines, the trucks are throwing their ladders. That's kind of the thought process that I have when I walk up and it's going pretty good. Not everybody's looking for those things, and I have the opportunity to do so.
Okay, so I can see Donnie nodding his head, but I'm going to play devil advocate on this one. So you mentioned how many are on that list that you just gave us?
Oh, like 10 or 12.
Okay, and you're making these decisions in how many seconds, you know?
It's not just me, right? Hopefully the three other guys that I'm with are also looking for those same things. And, you know, if one guy sees, hey, that spandrel space, the bricks are kind of sagging. Okay, well, that's something that he might have picked up that I didn't. So this is a true team effort.
Yeah, it's just that, you know, we always talk about why we wanted to focus on the company officer first before we got to Chief Fletcher is just the amount of information that has to be inputted to the company officer's decision on what we're going to do with the fire. So obviously, you know, Captain Hiddle, Skull, you know, Captain David, they all have that. And Roger, if he's riding up, and sure, Charlie is riding up as the, you know, in that seat, is that, you know, you get to make that decision of what we're going to do with the fire. And just the amount of inputs that you have to have is incredible, especially in today's fire service. So all things. And then, you know, you get the, for the lack of a better term, it's like watching, you know, an Apollo movie. You know, is it a go or no go? You know, somebody's got to make that decision. And then it's usually focused on that first company officer. So go ahead, Donnie. I can see you're biting at the bit with the head nods and the twirling. So.
No. These are all great points, especially from a company level perspective. Charlie, Dave, everybody brought up really, really good points. The first thing I did when we came across this topic was I jotted some of my notes down, my thought process on it. And then I reached out to 10 or 11 of battalion chiefs that I highly respect within our agency. A couple guys from Detroit that I'm buddies with. And just said, hey, give me your top three considerations on vacant structures. And the other thing that I did was, and I'm glad these guys brought it up, once I got the chief's perspective, was I sent it to five or six lieutenants that I highly respect and entrust within our department. And oddly enough, majority of the people came back with similar responses, with the number one response being, have we burned this structure before? And just, you know, Ricky, I know you and I have had a couple vacants together in the last couple of years. I think of the two next to each other that we had within the last year. And then a couple of years ago, I think I radioed from another fire to you on one that I knew you were going to. And we can talk about that later. But the things to take into consideration, you know, has there been previous fires in this structure that we know of? Charlie brought up a good point. Look at the windows and doors. Has the roof been burned off? Are there no windows and no doors? Dave talked about that too. So one thing that getting out and looking at, we talk about abandoned. Is it vacant? Is it abandoned? Is it a dilapidated? And I'm on board with Dave. Everything is it's not vacant until we prove otherwise. But there are some signs and symptoms of these houses that we look at and we, you know, make our risk versus reward balanced off of that. And looking at some of the dilapidated houses in the area that I work in, you know, oddly enough, you can see these signs of where people are occupying these structures and you can see where they're not. I can go into a burned out house and say, hey, they're still using this one bedroom, or with pretty good certainty that nobody's living in here. They might be using it as a restroom, but nobody's really staying in here. And you know, one thing that I kind of jotted down and I passed along to my guys when we had this conversation after the Stricker Street fire is, look at these roofs, look at these windows, look at these doors. Oddly enough, even squatters like amenities, right? They're going to be going in there because they want to get out of the rain. They want to get away from the elements. You know, if that roof is burned off, are they any better in that one? Or are they going to go try and find a vacant with the roof on it? Something to consider. Being a battalion chief, I cover roughly five first dues as the first chief and then another five or seven as the second due chief. So I can't know every vacant within you know, the 3rd, 5th, 1st Battalion of 7th Battalion of Prince George's County. But what I tell my guys is, hey, get out and look at the vacants in your first due and make note of them. Outside of Baltimore, Detroit, and a handful of others, you're not going to have entire blocks of vacants. You should have a pretty good grasp of, at least in a, you know, a an urban rural setting county fire department, you know, you should have a grasp of the 15 to 20 to 30 vacants within your first due and have an ongoing list of them. For me, I know the handful of vacants that I drive by every single day and I make note of them and I stop and I look at them and I look at the inside and I run the plan through my head. But realistically, I'm not going to be able to do that for every vacant in the first due. Oddly enough, the first due officer is going to be the most knowledgeable on what's in their first due, and I have to rely on them. But how do we get there with that? And that's, you know, I have those conversations with them. Hey, these are what I look for in a vacant. These are what I look for. These are my expectations of when we should go in and when we shouldn't go in. Again, we don't have a policy on it, so it's a conversation that I have to have with a company level officer on what my expectations are. Train and trust and empower your company officers and give them the autonomy to decide. Evaluate the decisions, right? So I'm not going to be there. I'm more than likely not going to be the first arriving as much as I try. If I'm going somewhere, you know, and you know, say to an outlying station's first due and they pull up on a vacant, I've had that conversation. Hey, these are my expectations to you. These are my expectations. This is what I'd like for you to do. And I want you to act, or not want you to act, but I want you to consider these when you make your decision as a company level officer, because I want you to think. The joy that I have there is, again, they may be pulling up moth to flame. They're taking all of Charlie's considerations, and they are, Charlie, they're great considerations. And subconsciously, you can look and make 5 to 7 good considerations as you're approaching the front door in a matter of seconds. Our brains are phenomenal at that. The advantage that I have, though, is I get to pull up on the scene, kind of detach myself from Charlie's approach of leading the company officer and take that big look at the picture. Once I get there, I can rerun my OODA loop of like, hey, what do we have? You know, where is it? Where is it going? Is there exposure problems? Does it look to be occupied? Did Charlie miss something on his original thing? Am I gathering more information? And then I act and make my secondary decision on, hey, yes, we can operate within here, or no. Hey, Charlie, I'm seeing some stuff that you didn't see. Let's pull it out and reconsider. At which point, you know, we can still do some tactics, you know, maybe run a thermal from a ladder on a second floor window from the exterior, or VES certain rooms that appear to be unoccupied. But that's my stance on it. And what are your thoughts, Ricky?
That's a lot.
Sort of long-winded. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I want to kind of go to Roger. I'm going to come back to yours and mine on that one, though. Roger, you got something you want to add here while we're in there?
So several different things. It's what's the structure? We've all kind of hit on that already. Like, is it a framer? Is it newer construction? Is it old construction? Majority of ours is 100+ years old. What's it been through? Previous burns? What's the fire involvement right now? Do we just have a small trash fire in the rear of the first floor, or do we have 3 full floors, front to back, top to bottom, of fire, chugging diesel laden, jet fuel looking smoke out of it? We all go out. We're, like Ricky pointed out, the medic runs, the errands, whatever we're doing. We need to be in the community. We need to be out there looking through it, have an idea of what we have going on. So that all adds up to when we show up and it's actually on fire. We've already put eyes in it. We've already walked through it. We've already known, hey, this, like, we have some pictures that'll come up. Like Dave found, and some other companies had previous found them. You see them in the front and you're like, oh, there, nobody can be in there. Then you look, and next thing, there's a second floor completely occupied room from squatters. So, but not taking the medic runs or not going out and walking through, understanding, we went through time and time again trying to find a vacant to pull hose lines through and flow some water and everything else. And every time we went trying to, okay, let's check out this vacant, it was either collapsed, so we can't use that, or okay, this one's pretty decent, it was occupied by squatters. So we pretty much played hell trying to find something to actually flow some water through. But going out, one of my first lieutenants I had when I had my senior spot, he was very big on, as you're approaching the block, like physically slow down. So as you're younger, you physically slow down to take in things, take in all the considerations, the view, whatever it is. As you get the more reps and the more things going, then you can speed it up. And that slow down, you're still slowing the scene down, but still moving quickly. But that comes with the time and the experience. It's good.
You good? All right. So I'm gonna leave you guys something to marinate on here. So, and we'll go back, you know, through the Brady Bunch squares here to get everybody's kind of opinion on it. But so I guess what I kind of wrote down here, it's what you're used to and what you're accustomed to. So, like I said, I'm in, you know, prior, you know, when I was in the organization, we had tons of vacant apartment buildings. I mean, literally, you know, everything was in a vacant for like in the early 2000s. But, you know, now that's kind of gone away, you know, and Donnie said it himself. It's, you know, certainly decreased down. But look, when you go through, you know, Skull's community, you go through Charles and Rogers and David's community, I that's what gets me about people that don't understand this process, about why these urban fire departments are in these buildings. I mean, look, I had it's fortunate and unfortunate, a chance to go to cover Baltimore City the day of the funeral. And, you know, you drive around and go, there's no way I'm going to be in this building. There's just not a chance. You know, I'm just like, hey, look, if we run back through here today for a fire, you know, I'm not letting anybody in that building. And I do the same thing when I go to Harrisburg. You know, I go, you know, to the Allison. I'm like driving through the streets and going, man, if these guys go in this building, they're out of their minds. But it's just what I'm, you know, what I'm accustomed to what I'm seeing. Whereas, you know, that building scares me. Whereas, you know, if you're with Skull, Roger, you know, Charlie, you know, or David, these buildings are what they're in every day. You know, running the medical locals, running the water leaks, running the whatever they're running in Baltimore City in these urban areas. I mean, I just don't think people can grasp what that building is. It's easy to stay from afar that, yeah, we have no business being in vacants. But, you know, that's the process that we have to go through. All the stuff that Charlie talked about, that's important stuff. Processing all that and making the decision, you know, and then having somebody say, yes, we're going to go, or, you know, we're going to go full out. So like Dave was saying, we're going to go full out with a whole box alarm with the companies, or, hey, we're going to go with one and one. Yeah, we may have two floors of fire, but we don't know what exactly the building's saying to us right now. So that, you know, you have to be in their shoes is, you know, but, you know, you have to understand the building. You know, I would be uncomfortable with it. I did a class with Skull here recently at a department, and they have a very young kid there that I knew when he was a young firefighter, and now he's a pretty seasoned veteran with Harrisburg. And, you know, I asked everybody, I said, what do you think my responsibility is as a chief officer? And my responsibility was this young kid when he was, you know, young Roger, when I knew young Roger, you know, full bore, inch and a half through the front door. I'll put out all three floors of fire, rescue seven people from each floor. And, you know, and I'm going to come out, blow snot out of my nose and be done with it. And that was okay. But now this young kid that in Harrisburg has a beautiful wife, beautiful kids, and, you know, all his social media is focused around his family. And then what are my decision-making processes now? Is it, what am I willing to risk in this vacant or abandoned or whatever nomenclature we want to use? Is what is our risk factors? What am I willing to risk as a department? You know, because we talked about the MOP in Baltimore City or whatever we have in Harrisburg, you know, and then what am I willing to risk at a personal level? And then what am I willing to risk for the citizens? And look, I'm all about saving citizens and putting fires out. That is 100% our job. And, you know, but that's just something I think we need to throw out there. And what I wanted to kind of get to, and I'll kind of let Sammy let you start this next round, is just what are we willing to risk for these buildings?
Hey, Ricky, we had a guy with a hand up. If you want to hit him first, and then I'll come
sorry.
Back.
Sorry, who had their hand up? I apologize.
I did.
Sorry. Go ahead, David.
Just something that we kind of hinted at. I don't know if we said it directly, but I think we're all saying the same thing. As far as like your mid-Atlantic urban areas where we have, you know, a large amount of row homes built in, you know, the 1800s, early 1900s, the way that they were built, they can withstand a lot. But when you compare them to like your toothpick 2x4 kind of construction, lightweight construction that's built in the last 10 years and even worse now, that's held together with, you know, 2x4s and staples, the amount of abuse that they can take before something catastrophic happens is completely different than what, say, Roger, Snow, and myself are kind of used to fighting fire. And then I can't comment on, you know, Wichita, or I don't have any experience there to comment. And you know, PG, I don't really have much either. But, you know, we can go in these houses that are vacant, and, you know, most people would look at them from an outsider's standpoint and be like, nope, that's ridiculous. I can't believe how dangerous you guys are. And it's like, there's a trust thing between the chiefs and the company officers and the company officers and the firefighters that, you know, we know our buildings. So the type of construction, I really wanted to, you know, I really wanted to make that clear. Like at this, where we're going, is not always your lightweight 2x4 staple built construction. It can take a beating.
I got you. Sam, and then we'll go to Skull.
So you were asking me about what I'm willing to risk.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't mean to oversimplify it, but it really is. It's like driving on ice. We're going to move forward, and it's been talked about by everybody in here. It's just, there's a lot of different factors that you're looking at, and it's a continuous size up. And it starts with understanding fire behavior, understanding that the fire is going to behave differently because of voids and holes in the floor and holes in the walls where they've ripped the copper out, and moving slow and evaluating things. And if they don't look good and we don't have a known life hazard in there, then, you know, there are going to be times where we have to slow down or just completely stop and come out and get control of the building again. And when we get control of the building, we'll get a search when it's safe for us to do. One of the things I wanted to add in there that, you know, at least is big for me when I pull up is the yard. If it's a single occupancy, you can usually get a pretty good idea of how dilapidated that structure is based on how the yard has been, what it looks like, right? And if it's a multiple occupancy, the lack of traffic will usually give you an idea if it's just vacant or just not taken care of and abandoned and being squatted in. And you can see some paths through the brush where people are going in and out. I think somebody even hit on that. You know, you walk around on the 360 and figure out if somebody has opened it up somewhere to get in. And that kind of gives you a life profile as well. But ultimately, I think while we talked about a lot of different pieces of information, it's multiple pieces of information that bring us to the same conclusion that give us a good sound foundation for the tactics we choose to employ.
All right, Skull.
All right, well, I've been doing this for a long time now. I started here many moons ago. Every vacant was a go. We didn't do the USAR markings back end. So every freaking building fire we went to, no matter how bad it was, we were going inside and putting that fire out. We were doing buildings that had burnt multiple times. And there was just, it was the Wild West. And things have changed. And some good things have come over that. So like I said, we got the USAR markings now. We're starting to use a little bit more intelligence. We do have an SOG, SOP. You know, I know some of you guys don't do this, but if, you know, our stuff's two stories, three story row homes, if we have two floors of fire, we go right to the wagon plane. I know some people don't do that, but I like that tactic. I think that keeps us safe. So, but yeah, getting back to the old school stuff, you know, coming up here as a young man, and these guys are burning every day. I was petrified coming from the suburbs up here. These guys were going up these vacants, stretching lines up through these places, and there was no treads on the risers or on the stringers. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm going to die in this place. But this is the way that the brothers in the 70s and 80s operated every stinking day. And it just absolutely amazed me. It took me a while to get the courage and learn how to, you know, operate in these buildings. But yeah, things are changing and for the good. But getting back to the brother just talked about building construction. And I know a lot of people discuss that. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe you guys go into these vacant buildings. But he hit it right on the money. These places were built with rough cut, true dimensional lumber, and they can take a ton of fire. Like I said, if I thought I would be petrified working in the suburbs because of, you know, the lightweight. So that stuff scares me to death. But operating, like I said, these vacant buildings, they really don't scare me. For the younger kids, it probably, you know, is a new thing for them. But from doing this for so many years, it's you know, it's just everyday operations for us. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay, Donnie, do you have anything you want to add there before I get back up to Charlie?
No, I just I think everybody's brought up good points. Sam brought up a good point about, you know, look at the yard, look and see what kind of traffic is going through that yard. Do you have good reason to believe that somebody is there? Is it boarded up tightly? You know, another thing to consider is it a room and an occupant, or is it room and contents on fire, or is the structure itself actually burning when you arrive, and what floor is on fire? Again, I go back to trusting the company officers. You know, we talk about lightweight construction. What houses are truly lightweight? Is that brick or is that a brick facade? And the only way we know these kind of things, similar to, do we know whether these dilapidated houses are vacant or occupied, is getting out there and walking them. When you run the medic locals and there's a vacant next door, take a look, open the door, take a look, make a note. You know, if your department doesn't have a formal USAR marking, like Skull was talking about, make an informal marking that you share across all four shifts. You know, it's nothing that's going to be completely decided upon arrival. It's something that's, you know, you're going to have good, a good idea of whether this is going to be occupied by prior to the fire. You know, again, we drive past these houses and go, I know people are living, I know there's squatters in that house. Or you go past a couple of them and you're like, ain't no way, you know, a rabid dog is living in there. So you got to get out there and you got to walk them and look at them.
Charlie?
Yeah, so with the building construction stuff, like Captain Garcia was talking about, most of our dwellings that are vacant, I think our number is somewhere around 14,000 vacants in the city through their open data. And most of those are 2 and 3 story ordinary construction. The brick is 2 whites thick. They're load bearing walls. They have Eastern hemlock or pine dimensional lumber. I mean, they are stout and they are strong buildings. It's just the degradation over time and weathering that's kind of, you know, taking their toll. So it is important to get out there and know your first new area. I mean, some first new areas, like where Captain Garcia is, has a little less vacants compared to where Roger's at, where there's blocks upon blocks of vacants. But really the key is to know your first due, to know where people might be, where they will probably be, and kind of put the sum of all the parts together. You know, you're taking all those clues and information. If it's on fire, open it up. Take a peek in there. Is there a floor? Can you see obvious collapse? You know, that's how you kind of judge how far you're willing to go.
All right. So other than the obvious, you know, tragedy that happened to Baltimore City, why do we believe this topic, one, is so controversial, and two, why it's so important? So, Sammy, do you want me to give you a break so you can think, or do you want me to start off with you?
No, I think it was said in the beginning, and it's a great point. you know, you can't just let it vacant burn. You might have occupied next to it. On top of that, we don't know if anyone's in there or they're not. I mean, plain and simple, we're not asking to put a firefighter's life on the line, but if we can get in there and we can extinguish it and we can control the environment, then that's exactly what we're paid to do. And that's what we signed up to do. And that's what we should do. It's that simple to me. And, you know, again, I'm not trying to downplay this, but sometimes vacants are the easiest thing to extinguish because you don't have a shit ton of obstacles to deal with. You usually have a pretty good idea where it started. Sometimes they have limited fuel loads. So you got an idea which room they set up in. And then other times they're an absolute mess. And those are usually the ones where somebody's passed and the vagrants have got in and they've sifted through all their stuff. And it almost feels like horror conditions. And it's an ice rink of all the shit that's been spread out on the floor.
All right. And Sammy brought up a pretty good point that, obviously we don't have the time to go into it today, but he also, with after COVID and, the economic problems that the country's been having. I mean, it isn't just the row homes that are vacant now. We can go to strip shopping centers, huge big box stores that people have, they've just left abandoned. So, those have a whole different set of size up considerations and what we're actually going to do with the fire. So, Dave, do you want to go back to my original question to Sammy? Would you like to comment on that or?
Sure. Back to the risk, like how much I'm willing to risk or why it's controversial?
Why the controversial and why it's an important topic?
So I think it's important because it happens. And if you don't make good decisions, things can go bad pretty quick. But I think it's controversial because of experience. There's not that many fire departments out there that are going to vacant dwellings or have that many vacant dwellings. So it's easy to critique. And I blame a lot of it on social media. I think that there's probably some positive in social media, but I don't participate in it at all because I don't like the platform that it gives a lot of guys to voice an opinion that there's no experience to back the opinion up with. So I think it's easy to put a picture up on the internet with no description or anything and then just get tore apart by people that really don't have the ground to tear you apart on. So that's why I think it's extremely controversial. So for somebody like, I can only speak for Baltimore, but for somebody like us that goes to vacant dwellings a lot and probably pushes the limits on how far we go in them sometimes or close to it. That kind of stuff makes me pretty mad when I see like our videos get tore apart. So like I said, I think it's easy to critique. And again, I mentioned it earlier. In my opinion, it's not vacant until after the search is complete, and that's because of when you take into account like way bigger than just your on scene size up. Like you have Charlie spit out some numbers. You have this many vacant dwellings. And you know that you have an extremely large number of homeless people. Like that could be an occupied home. I think it's controversial, mainly because of the internet. But I don't really know how far else to go.
You've said a mouthful, my friend, and it was a good mouthful. You said it rather well.
All right. Rather well.
Donnie?
Then I'm going to mute myself.
Okay, I gotcha. Donnie?
Dave brought up a good point. The internet warriors, and they'll critique and criticize anything and everything you do. Anybody can be a Monday morning quarterback. Those are the same guys. So you have to look at it like this, right? Now, we're talking about previous line of duty deaths. The same guys that are sitting there saying, no, you should not go in that vacant structure. That vacant structure is completely unoccupied. What are you doing? But, does that mean we shouldn't go in the dollar store fire or the auto repair shop fire at 3 a.m, right? Are those considered, let's write those off every single time? Or do we have to make a conscious decision and make an educated decision on what we're going to do there. You know, that's kind of my thought process to it. It's everything. You can't make a blanket policy on everything. That's the last thing you want to do in any department. In my opinion, is make a blanket policy that we will not go in vacant fires. We will not go in this, that. You have to educate. You have to educate your officers. You have to educate your backstep guys. You have to educate your chiefs and allow them to make decisions based on the facts that they see at the time of their arrival. Simply put.
All right, Roger, are you back or are you still out?
I'm back.
Okay. Did you get the question?
No, sir.
Okay. So we were talking about why we think these fires are one, so controversial, and then why this topic is so important.
Kind of reiterating some of the, what everybody said, like the and whatnot. It's controversial because so many people are seeing them after the fact through the videos on social media or whatever. So it's always easier when you have the full story that you can try to throw your judgments or your criticisms at that. But and similarly, if you're not here, if you haven't had the experience, then it's similar to most all of us in this room or in this group. We can't imagine being in a firefight over it across the pond deployed in the Army or the Marine Corps or anything else like that. But people do it day in, day out. That becomes their norm. They're doing operation after operation. They're getting good at it. Being in cities and areas that we're in and getting a chance almost daily to be able to hone our craft, experience it, go through the motions, starting to make those decisions, then it becomes what we do. We just continue to be smarter and better with it and make the best decisions that we possibly can.
All right. And Charlie?
There's really nothing I could say that Captain Gercio or Rise or anybody else has already said. I would like to defer back to Captain Gercio and his pictures if you guys have time for it.
Yeah,
I think that sends a message of why it's important.
Okay, so Pete, can you, Captain, we'll probably start with the one with the light in the window, in the upstairs window. So he's going to show a picture that, can everybody see that?
Did you want me to talk about this one?
Yeah, this is the one with the light
upstairs. So I think this was the 1300 block of Mosier. It's in, it's like a eight box right in front of the firehouse. We were just driving past one night this spring, and the tillerman noticed the light on the second floor. I mean, from the alpha side, without that light, I'd call this in as a two-story, middle-of-the-group, vacant dwelling. But you can see the little TV dish thing, and that cord is actually also like zip-tied extension cord. So they're getting power into this. So I never walked around back. I don't really try to mess around in the alleys in the dark in the air. But yeah, so, you know, some people might write this off, and then others would continue with a intelligent, aggressive, you know, but, you know, an interior fire attack and a primary search. And you might, you know, save a life on that second floor because somebody's living in there. So that was one of them.
Okay. And then,
so this was just the day after Christmas. This is either 8 or 14 box. I can't remember. West Baltimore. But a vacant, what I would call a storefront or a mixed occupancy. You can see it's the corner. We're looking at the Charlie and the Bravo side, some type of closed down store on the first floor. And, you know, then, I guess from like that first floor bump out on the Delta side of it, they were getting up to the roof of that first floor bump out. And then they have that ramp up into the second floor. And that's a person in the second floor door. And they had a little heater up there. This was a super cold day. I mean, this was the day after Christmas. So it was in Baltimore. I mean, we were pushing like the teens in the daytime for a high, pretty windy. You could see her, she's all bundled up, and they had, you know, some heat, a heat source in there. So, you know, again, from the alpha side, I don't have a picture of the alpha side on this one, but, you know, you would think this is a vacant, and some people might write it off and be like, nobody's in there, it's a vacant. But there you have multiple people on the second floor. And then the next ones, if you can get to them, they're my favorites.
The one with the brick in the, yeah, down there?
Yep. So this was, I sent this to the guy that runs the 8x10's social media site. I was on truck 23 this day. This was quite a few months ago. And that the front door had plywood on it, like super secured. So the I forget what we got called out for, but the police called us and they couldn't get in. It was for like a psych case or something like that, some type of medic run just to assist the police. So we walked around back and the back looked super shady and I didn't want anybody going in. And the plywood was up against the second floor middle window, just up against it. It wasn't secure, but we didn't throw a ladder. I wanted to take the front door just, you know, for the practice and everything. So we actually, you know, the front door was 3-inch screws. So we just, you cut a hole right down the front of it. And, you know, we pulled the plywood off and the cops went in first. And the one cop stuck his foot through the floor a few feet in and just called it. He wasn't going anymore. So he came out and we could hear the people upstairs. So we walked to Joyce and went up the steps and there was upwards of a dozen people living on the second floor. This was a super deep house. The third floor was completely dilapidated. The whole house was completely dilapidated. But the whole back of the second floor had bunk beds and mattresses. So the way they were getting in, this is the end of the group, obviously. And that Charlie Delta corner had an exterior stairwell going directly up to the second floor back door. And I wouldn't let anybody go up it because it looked so shady. And the interior steps looked a little better. So that's how they were coming in and out, was the second floor rear door. So if you go one more, you can see the picture of the first floor, the second floor front room, which is where multiple people were living. But really the back of the house was, you know, they had beds for a dozen people in here. And this was in the 1900 block of Wilkins Avenue, which is a 14 box, Southwest Baltimore, West Baltimore. They go to probably the most first in fires in the city.
Peter, do we have that picture of the interior?
Unfortunately, I do not have. Sorry.
Okay. Roger, are you able to, or I can send it real quick to somebody? Roger definitely has it.
We got to kind of get wrapped up here. So
okay, got you. Well, I mean, the second floor front room had, you know, obviously living in it.
All right, so we you know, just give you some of those examples. I mean, the only thing that the pieces that you just got to kind of be aware of what's going on here. I mean, these are bad buildings that are occupied, and the risk is entirely up to your training, you know, your knowledge of building construction, what your department's willing to risk, what you as a company officer are willing to risk, you know, making those decisions. And those decisions have to be followed. You know, we can't have company officers or, you know, firefighters not obeying what the company officer says or the decision that they make. But, you know, I'm certainly not going to tell you never to go in a vacant building. I just want you to have a good decision-making process, going through all the stuff that Charlie talked about, you know, as you're walking up to that building, taking a good look at it, you know, knowing your first due area, understanding all that. I don't think people appreciate nearly as much knowing your area as they do with any other facet of their job, you know. I like knowing streets and buildings. Sam likes to know who made the tumbler inside the lock and what year it was manufactured. You know, that's just has no interest to me, but, you know, but it's just, you got to know your area and you got to know those buildings. So, all right. So we're pushing it. I'm sure Pete's going to be chiming in on me, telling me to get off the screen here, but I wanted to thank all our guests that were invited today, David, Charlie, Skull had to drop off. I think he was working today. As always, our instructors, Roger, Sammy, and Donnie, we appreciate your time. I would ask everybody once again to keep Bobby Halton's family in their prayers and also all his coworkers. Obviously, Bobby was a bright personality, and he and the people that he worked with were outstanding. He had a close relationship with all of them, and I feel for all of them losing a leader as charismatic and powerful as he was. So I'm sure he would have enjoyed being here talking to this, and he would have given his opinion, and it would have been a strong one for sure. So we'll miss him, and but we'll have plenty of time to remember him again at FDIC as we come up and every day in our lives, how he's touched all of us. So from all of us at Tradition Training, all of our guests, we know this is a very big topic, and we only have 1 hour to talk about it, but you can send any of us questions, just go to our Traditions Training site, and I'll get it to, the captain or Charlie or Skull if you need be. So thanks for coming on. I appreciate you guys taking time out of your day. I thought it was a really important topic, and I appreciate it. So Pete, we're going to sign off. Thanks to everybody at Clarion Events Group and Fire Engineering. And thank you once again to our boss, Bobby, for letting us do this.